Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, August 13th, 2015. A government negotiator says there's still no agreement with the rebels on security issues as the deadline draws near. And hundreds of protesters in Warup State...
You have the issue.
And hundreds of protesters in Warp State capital say they don't like the IGAD security arrangements and think Riek Machar should be charged with war crimes. We'll have those stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The clock is ticking down on Monday's deadline for the warring parties in South Sudan to reach a peace deal. Today, delegates for President Salva Kiir's government and Riek Machar's rebel group discussed security issues, which are some of the main points of dispute blocking the way to a final peace deal. Peter Bashir Bande is South Sudan's Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs and chairs the Security Committee at the talks. He spoke with journalists after today's meeting. South Sudan in Focus reporter Ian Bior has this update on the Addis Ababa talks.
Bashir says there are deadline for the warring sides to sign a peace deal, but they still have a long way to go. Bashir, who is the chairman of the Security Committee at the talks, says the government is particularly concerned about three issues that have not been addressed yet.
You have the issue of the demilitarization of Juba and other major towns in South Sudan. Our position as a government has been very clear on that. And we have the issue of the scope of the permanent ceasefire. And we have also the issue of the time frame for the unification of the forces, and these were the most contentious issues.
Bashir says it is important that South Sudanese maintain sovereignty in their country. He says the two sides agree today that foreign forces will not be deployed in a demilitarized Juba to maintain order. IGAD had suggested this as an option in the compromise deal it put to the warring sides. Bashir says the negotiators at the talks are looking at another way to ensure security in Juba.
Second option is that we should have a joint protection unit that is a national one formed through the transitional architecture which was to oversee the implementation of the ceasefire. That body plus the international body anyway, which are already existing in South Sudan because they will be there, though that will be the body. Then they will coordinate the government, the transitional government of resistance forces, plus these bodies will coordinate and provide security in the national capital.
Another security issue at the talks has been whether there should be one national army or separate armed forces that are drawn from rebel and government forces. Bashir says he wants a united national army. He also said it should be set up quickly.
And not only that, it should be done giving sufficient time for elections, because it is these forces which will now partake in protecting the election that we will undertake in the 27th month of the transitional period.
For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
Meanwhile, faith-based groups attending the talks say they will step in and help broker a deal between the warring parties if the process led by the IGAD Plus mediation team fails to bring peace to the country. John Tanza reports from Addis Ababa.
The Anglican Bishop of Rajaf Diocese in Central Equatoria State has traveled to Addis Ababa at least 9 times over the past 18 months, every time East African Bloc IGAD has convened peace talks for South Sudan. Bishop Enoch Tombe Stephen leads the faith-based group at this latest round of talks, where the mediation team has been expanded to include the United States and its Troika partners, the United Kingdom and Norway, the United Nations, the European and African Unions, China, and 5 African states. Tombe says the church has launched a grassroots peace initiative for South Sudan. The aim of the initiative is to help South Sudanese start a countrywide discussions on issues that are dividing the warring sides and preventing them from reaching a final peace deal.
The fact that they are now meeting face to face, we should still, of course, expect that something good will come out of it. But if it doesn't, then we are not going to wait for them to agree. I think the church has already launched a program in Juba last Saturday. We are going to mobilize the people so that they also participate and contribute towards their own peace.
The South Sudan Council of Churches issued a statement last month calling on the warring parties to sign an agreement by the August 17 deadline imposed by the IGAD Plus mediation team. Tombe notes that the church was the driving force behind the process that led to the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, or CPA, that ended the long civil war in Sudan and led to the birth of South Sudan.
We had a long experience in the last war. The CPA came after the churches set up a parallel forum and Entebbe process. We invite the same leaders to our own neutral forum. And we will let them talk without the watchful eyes of the international community. Because obviously these are their own people, and they will listen to them, much more than external force.
Bishop Enoch says that experience left the church well-placed to convince President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar to settle their differences and end the 20-month conflict that has divided South Sudan. The Deputy Secretary General of South Sudan's Islamic Council agrees with Bishop Enoch. Mohammed Hassan Murjan says the leaders of the warring parties must swallow their pride and settle their differences. Hassan says faith-based groups are ready to work with President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar so that the two leaders can resume constructive dialogue.
I believe if they trust themselves, things can be solved. And I think they will come to their sense and they're going to reach some agreement. Now we just praying to God that gives them the wisdom so that they can reach the solution for the people of South Sudan.
Bishop Enoch says that might be a tall order because
ultimately power sharing means also personal interests. For example, those who are in power now find it difficult to leave their seats to those who want to come in. So it's as simple as that.
That being said, the faith-based groups are willing to work with IGAD Plus to try to extract an agreement that is good for all the people of South Sudan, not just the nation's leaders. For VOA News, I'm John Tanza in Addis Ababa.
Meanwhile, the European Union special envoy to the Horn of Africa is warning both sides in the conflict that there will be serious consequences if they don't sign a deal by Monday's deadline. Eskinder Freyou has that part of the story for VOA from Addis Ababa.
European Union Special Representative Alexander Rondo says the international community is determined to have an agreement signed by Monday's deadline. He says the IGAD Plus mediators are pushing for a deal to be reached, not for the benefit of South Sudan's leaders, but for the good of the people.
This is an exercise which demonstrates that the international community is unanimous. It's a message to the leaders, or political leaders of South Sudan, that the international community has an absolutely clear united stand and voice on all these matters.
Rondo says President Kiir and rebel leader Machar have a moral obligation to sign a deal by the deadline. If they don't, he says, they will not be let off scot-free.
We are 18 months on, almost. Tens of thousands more dead. Lord knows how many children suffering, how many women mutilated and raped. So it's not a question of hope or not. As I said, if they do not rise to their responsibilities, they themselves too will be engulfed by the chaos and the measures and the consequences that will follow.
Rondos did not elaborate on what shape those consequences might take, but he did say it would help the peace process if President Kiir and Machar were in Addis Ababa for the talks.
They are the official leaders. The responsibility rests with them. They are the leaders, and so they must assume their responsibilities as leaders.
IGAD chief mediator Siyum Masfen said the two leaders were expected to join the talks today. Machar has been in Addis Ababa since yesterday, but President Kiir has not yet arrived, and there is no official word as to when he will. For VOA News, I'm Skinder Freo in Addis Ababa.
And we've just heard from Addis that the chief negotiators from the warring sides are briefing the IGAD Plus mediation team at this hour about the points in the compromise peace deal that they agree on and, more importantly, that they disagree on. Our correspondents in Addis tell us the two sides are saying they are looking for ways to overcome the areas of disagreement so that they indeed can meet the August 17th deadline for signing a deal. In Kwajoke, business came to a standstill today as hundreds of people took to the streets in the Warup State Capital to protest against the IGAD Plus proposed compromise deal. The demonstrators say the proposal is a recipe for more civil strife in a country that has suffered through 20 months of war. People from Kwajoke Theater Ground gathered there this morning to protest that IGAD deal, and the women ululated, sang anti-Riek Machar and anti-IGAD songs. Many of them had ropes fastened around their stomachs to demonstrate their mourning for their children that they say were killed by Machar's rebel forces in the conflict. As the demonstrators marched from the theater to the state legislative assembly, many carried white flags and placards which read, "No two armies in one nation." Before reaching the assembly, a dramatization was played out by Kwajoke National Secondary students. The youth enacted a scene in which Riek Machar was under arrest and being interrogated for war crimes by prosecutors with the International Criminal Court in The Hague. After a series of questions, Machar is sentenced to death for killing innocent people in what's been called the 1991 Boer Massacre, as well as the more recent massacre in Bentiu, along with other attacks in Malakal and Boer. 15-year-old Angwet Yai served on the pretend panel of presiding judges.
You have been sent to death. What you have done, you have did so many things here in the nation. You have killed innocent people who know nothing. So you have sent to death.
When the protesters reached the assembly building, a petition was read by the head of the Civil Society Alliance, a certain Mr. Bang Bang, before presenting it to the General Assembly.
As you have listened to the petition of the civil society in Warup State, it is indicate that we are rejecting the two army in one state. We are rejecting the so-called 53% to SPLM in opposition.
State lawmaker Arap Dankwal represented the Speaker of Warup State at the Assembly. He commended the Civil Society Alliance for making their voices heard.
Let me take this opportunity to tell you that all civil society, as representatives of people in Legislative Assembly, we have received your petition, and it is our obligation to present and to forward your petition to the higher authority.
That demonstration was organized by some 50 civil society organizations from Warup State and the disputed region of Abyei, bordering Sudan. Santino Manute prepared that report in Kwajoke. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. IDPs speak out about deplorable conditions at a camp run by Central Equatoria State. That story after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how many children would you like to have and why?
I would like to have 4 children, 2 boys and 2 girls. I want them to have playmates so that they don't get lonely.
I would like to have at least 3 children in the future because I'll be able to cater for them and take care of their moral needs, their financial needs and their basic needs also. But if I have more children, there's going to be difficulty.
I would like to have 6 children. I want to name all my siblings. I will name myself Junior, then any of my brothers and sisters. I want to have the representative to just keep our family going.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A peace deal is desperately needed by the more than 2 million people who have been displaced by South Sudan's conflict. Some of them, like the more than 3,000 in a camp for the displaced in Juba's Konya Konya neighborhood, live in appalling conditions. They drink from the same water source that they defecate in, and they feel that nobody is doing anything to help them. VOA fellow Kaltuma Vanessa has this report about the Mahad camp for IDPs in Juba.
A group of women gathered for a meeting in the Mahadi camp of IDPs. On the agenda is the life-threatening lack of proper sanitation in the camp. Mahadi is located in the ground of a Muslim primary school, less than 1 kilometer from the west bank of the Nile. The camp hosts more than 3,400 displaced people. Many fled their homes in Jonglei State when the conflict started in December 2013 and have been here ever since. The camp was set up and is run by the Central Equatorial State Authority. In the 20 months that they have been here, the IDPs in Mahadi camp say they have had little, if any, access to latrine, washroom or water point. Peter Kaka Gatho has lived here for a year and a half. Gatho says a Zuch NGO called People in Need built 11 latrines for the camp, but they ended up collapsing and were not replaced. Gatho, who is the camp's secretary, says these days men, women and children in this camp relieve themselves wherever they can.
What we have to do, the people have to go look for where they can go and vacate, and that one we cannot know where do they go from. But you can just see everybody in the morning dispersed, going look for a place where you can go and vacate. But at the moment now in the camp here, we don't have any latrines.
People in Need left Mahadi camp 6 months ago. No other organization has stepped in to take their place. 54-year-old Angela Lodin Korak says women in the camp collect their daily supply of water directly from the River Nile. Korak says the women use the same water to drink, cook their food, and wash themselves. And at night they go back to the river to dispose of their human waste they have collected in plastic bags throughout the day. They know this is unhealth, but they have no choice. There is very little space in the camp. People live in tents that are packed tightly, not one next to the other. Some of the IDPs live in the school building. Flies swarm everywhere and crawl over pots and utensils, even as people cook and eat with them. Gotho says many people are suffering from diseases because of the condition they live in.
It is very terrible because the same river where they went and collect water, it is also the same river whereby they go and defecate at the river bank. And that's why I can see most of them are suffering from typhoid, diarrhea. I assume that those diseases are caused by their feces, maybe.
South Sudan activist Edmond Nyakana, who heads the Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, or SAPO, says the people living in Mahadi camp deserve similar treatment to the IDPs who are in UN compounds. Nyakana is calling on South Sudanese officials to step up and do something for the IDPs in a schoolyard in Juba. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa in Washington.
And that report was prepared by Jacob Achek in Juba. Continuing in Juba, South Sudan police officials yesterday admitted that some officers of the law are illegally collecting money from civilians who have been injured in traffic accidents or are victims of crime. As VOA fellow Tito Justin reports from Washington, police officials say that what some police are doing is definitely illegal and they're working to put a stop to the practice.
Police spokesperson Colonel James Mande says an investigation by the Office of the Inspector General of Police, or IGP, into the practice of police officers charging citizens for the accidents report, called Form Number 8, was launched last year. The probe began after the IGP's office received numerous complaints about unprofessional conduct by officers. Mande explained that when citizens sustained injuries during alleged criminal acts that include sexual violence, traffic accidents or any other type of assaults, police are supposed to provide them with form number 8. Mande says officers often consider completing form number 8 as a prerequisite for receiving medical treatment. But he says some officers apparently are demanding payment for the form which can delay urgently needed medical care.
It's per provision of Section 59 of the Code of Criminal Procedure 2008. The police personnel are bound to arrange for immediate medical examination of any injured person. Any delay caused by police personnel in immediate extension of medical aid to any injured person will be viewed as the dereliction of duty and misconduct and strictly dealt with under the existing rules and regulations.
Mande says form number 8 is only a mandatory requirement if an incident or case will be pursued in a court of law. He says it should not be treated as a precondition for providing medical service, and under no circumstances should a fee be charged.
In case any complaint is received against any police personnel trying to collect money for providing or filling form number 8, it will be treated as a serious misconduct and strict action will be taken against him or her as per Police Act rules and regulations.
Mande says the South Sudan National Police Service has established a police court which now handles abuses committed by the police.
Any police who has done anything to a citizen, we want the citizen to come forward and present the complaint so that we can investigate the case and bring that particular police to the police court and to face the law.
Mande says the National Police Service is appealing for cooperation from citizens, urging them to know their rights when interacting with the police. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Washington.
Waki Simon Wudu prepared that report from Juba. Activists gathered on Capitol Hill here in Washington, D.C. earlier this week to plead for more U.S. engagement to suppress the Lord's Resistance Army in East Africa and capture its infamous leader, Joseph Kony. VOA's Mariama Diallo reports from Washington.
This is the time to double the efforts against the Lord's Resistance Army in Uganda, human rights activists told the Tom Lantos Human Rights Commission on Monday. A five-year-old U.S. law on disarming LRA fighters and helping communities recover from the conflict sent U.S. military advisors to Central and East Africa to assist regional efforts. Paul Ronan is the project director at the Resolve LRA Crisis Initiative.
When President Obama came into office in 2008, the LRA had approximately 800 troops. When the bill was signed into law in 2010, Kony had about half that number. And today, thanks in large part to the military operations and the defection campaigns that are supported by U.S. troops in the field, there's only about 190 to 200 troops left.
Still, Ronan cautions that Joseph Kony shouldn't be underestimated.
What he has done is he has created an inner circle that is composed of his sons and some former bodyguards that are fiercely loyal to him, and he will do whatever he can to maintain his iron grip on the command structure.
Sasha Lesnev, the Associate Director of Policy for Congo, Great Lakes Region, and the LRA for the ENAF project, says he's worried about the LRA's new economic activities and its abilities to regenerate itself.
The LRA is increasingly poaching elephants for tusks and trading that ivory for ammunition, supplies, and food in Sudan with the likely complicity of the Sudanese government. The LRA is starting to trade gold and diamonds in the Central African Republic as well.
Sudan's ambassador to the United States, Moawiya Khalid, told VOA those allegations about Sudan are false and that his country has nothing to do with the LRA or Kony. The LRA began in the late 1980s in part as a movement to protect minority rights, but quickly became a personality cult around Kony. It's accused of being responsible for thousands of civilians' deaths and the kidnapping of tens of thousands of children and forced them to serve as fighters. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Here is a recap of some of today's top stories. Monday's deadline for the warring sides in South Sudan to reach a peace deal is fast approaching. Today, delegates for President Salva Kiir's government and Riek Machar's rebel group discuss security issues in Addis Ababa. Some of the main sticking points continue to be blocking the final peace deal. Peter Bashir Bondi is South Sudan's deputy minister of foreign affairs and chairs the security committee at the talks. He says disputes still remain over demilitarization and power sharing. Meanwhile, faith-based groups attending the talks in the Ethiopian capital say they will step in and help broker a deal between the warring parties if the process led by the International IGAD Plus mediation team fails to bring peace to the country. Business ground to a halt today as hundreds protested in the war upstate capital of Kwajok against the IGAD compromise peace deal. The demonstrators say the proposal is a recipe for more civil strife in a country that has suffered long enough. Women ululated and sang anti-Riek Machar and anti-IGAD songs at the event. Many of them had ropes fastened around their stomachs to demonstrate their mourning for their children that they say were killed by Machar's rebel forces in the conflict. As the demonstrators marched from the theater to the state legislative assembly, many carried white flags and placards which read, "No two armies in one nation." Before reaching the assembly, a dramatization was played out by Kwajok National Secondary students. They enacted a scene in which Machar was under arrest and being interrogated by war crimes by prosecutors with the International Criminal Court in The Hague. And finally, activists gathered on Capitol Hill earlier this week to plead for more U.S. engagement in efforts to suppress the Lord's Resistance Army in East Africa and capture its leader, Joseph Kony. Activists told the Tom Lantos Human Rights Commission this is the time to double the effort against the Lord's Resistance Army in Uganda. A five-year-old U.S. law on disarming LRA fighters and helping communities recover from the conflict sent U.S. military advisors to Central and East Africa to assist in those regional efforts. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Sura Yako by Sauti Sol. We've been listening to Sauti Sol with the song Sura Yako, the song U.S. President Barack Obama danced to recently in Kenya. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. We're glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.